This is VOA News. I'm Steve Dorman. A tsunami has killed more than 280 and left well over 1,000 injured and many missing. It hit the Indonesian islands of Java and Sumatra after a volcanic eruption. Reuters' David Doyle reporting.
Authorities say the western coast of Banten province has been hardest hit. As night fell on Sunday evening, rescue efforts continued, but workers and ambulances were finding it difficult to reach some affected areas because roads have been blocked by debris from damaged homes, upturned vehicles, and fallen trees.
Robin Andrews, a London-based volcanologist and science writer, tells us that he is likely the results of an eruption of the Krakatoa volcano.
It's a very active volcano, and it's been erupting for a while, and it looks like a rather large explosion coincided with the tsunami. And what people think is that part of the volcano either fell into the sea, or something already underwater sort of moved forwards as magma kind of intruded into the volcano, and that caused a tsunami.
On April, and actually September 28th, an earthquake and tsunami hit near the city of Palu, that's on the island of Sulawesi, killing 2,500, displacing about 70,000. An advanced UN truce monitoring team on the ground in the port of Hodeida in Yemen to keep watch on the ceasefire and deal. Both sides will be hopefully withdrawing from the city. Meantime, the UN says about 16 million people are in desperate need as a result of the civil conflict. Coalition of unions in Sudan says it plans to paralyze the government and doctors and other hospital workers planning to stay off the job today and only deal with emergencies. Coalition urging street protest to continue against the government. This is VOA News. The U.S. federal government is in a third day of a partial shutdown, and that will not end until after the Christmas holiday, as it stands now, when it's expected that Congress and President Trump will try to agree to a resolution on a funding impasse. The sticking point is money for a wall on the U.S. border with Mexico. President wants Congress to allocate $5.7 billion toward a southern border wall. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says his political party opposes Mr. Trump's request.
President Trump, if you want to open the government, you must abandon the wall. Plain and simple. The Senate's not interested in swindling American taxpayers for an unnecessary, ineffective, and wasteful policy.
On ABC's This Week, acting White House Chief of Staff and Office of Management and Budget Director Mick Mulvaney, when asked about President Trump's campaign promise that Mexico would pay for the wall, says it does not work that way.
I can't spend any money at the Office of Management and Budget. The Department of Homeland Security can't actually spend money from Mexico. We have to get it from the Treasury.
Congress has refused the president's request for a down payment on the $20 billion wall Mr. Trump says will thwart illegal immigration. As Ukraine enters its fifth winter of conflict, the United Nations is saying that civilians continue to be victimized by widespread human rights violations and abuse perpetrated by both the government and the Russian-backed rebels in Donetsk and Lugansk in eastern Ukraine. Lisa Schlein reporting now from the UN in Geneva.
Ukraine's civil conflict, which began April 2014, appears to be at a stalemate. However, this has not stopped the warring parties from subjecting the civilian population to gross violations of human rights on both sides of the contact line. This refers to the 500-kilometer line of separation between Ukrainian forces and Russian-backed separatist rebels. The UN has documented hundreds of abuses of the right to life, deprivation of liberty, and forced disappearance, torture and ill treatment, sexual violence, and unlawful or arbitrary detention. The report describes the hardships endured by the population due to Ukraine's worsening economic situation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
President Trump is saying that Deputy Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan will become the acting chief on January 1st, replacing Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, who announced his resignation last week. Get more on that story and all the hour's news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com. I'm Steve Dorman, VOA News.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, and today is Monday, December the 24th. Here are some of the stories we are covering for you this morning. The International Organization for Migration says that more than 6,600 Africans have died over the past 5 years, most while crossing the Sahara Desert towards Europe. The study notes that these numbers are just the tip of the iceberg. And a coalition of unions in Sudan says that it plans to, quote, paralyze the government with the first of what it says will be indefinite strikes by professionals. Doctors and other hospital workers plan to stay off the job today, Monday, and only deal with emergencies. An advisor to the Sudanese communication minister tells VOA that his government is ready to implement new measures to improve the economy.
Some arrangements now taken by the government to review the economical situation and the policies of how to administer the economy and how to remove these reasons behind the administration.
Dr. Rabi Abdelati Obeid is an advisor to the Sudanese communications minister. And in Zimbabwe, striking doctors who were ordered by the labor court in the country to end a 23-day strike are vowing to continue with the industrial action, saying that their demands have not been met by President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government.
In our position right now, most of our grievances that were presented to the minister have not been adequately addressed. Yes, and that alone has made some of our members and the majority, in fact, decide not to return to work because there is nothing at work.
Dr. Mtabisi Behbe is the Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association. Stay tuned. Those stories plus sports are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And we'll start off in Sudan, where a coalition of unions says that it plans to, quote-unquote, polarize the government with the first of what it says will be indefinite strikes by professionals. Doctors and other hospital workers plan to stay off the job today, Monday, and only deal with emergencies. The coalition is calling on all Sudanese to keep up their street protests against the Bashir government that were triggered last week by shortages of food and fuel, plus a sharp jump in the price of bread. Yesterday, Sunday, police used tear gas against a group of demonstrators who emerged from a football stadium in Omdurman. Protesters in other cities blocked roads and burned tires. The reported death toll since the protest erupted last Wednesday ranged from 8 to 22. And government officials blame the protest on what they call infiltrators and saboteurs. Meanwhile, Sudanese authorities arrested 14 leaders of an opposition coalition this past weekend. An advisor to the Sudanese communications minister, Dr. Rabi Abdelati, told VOA that his government is ready to implement new measures to improve the economy. Speaking to VOA's Peter Cloti, he said that the administration would support an independent inquiry into the violence.
Some arrangements now taken by the government to review the economical situation and the policies of how to administer the economy and how to remove these reasons behind the administration.
Some people are calling for an independent investigation to how the government brutally tried to suppress the protests by violently attacking protesters. Is your government ready to be part or accept an independent investigation into this?
Yes, according to our constitution, that free expression is one of the rights of citizens. And demonstration also is a right of citizens to demonstrate and to protest against any policies that not meeting the requirements of the people or creating any obstacles for their life. And I think that the victims in these demonstrations and the loss really will be a subject for investigation, so that to see who is behind the destruction of the belongings of the people and the property of the people, and also who is behind the violence that resulted in the victims especially those who killed him during these demonstrations and protests.
Sadiq al-Mahdi, the leader of the National Umma Party, said the Sudanese government should accept a peaceful transfer of power or to engage in a losing battle with the Sudanese people, because he said President al-Bashir and his government have failed to address the needs of the people, which he said led to the demonstrations in the first place.
Yes, I think that this is the opinion of the leader of Umma Party, Sadiq al-Mahdi. But actually, who is, have an authority to govern and to rule about the performance of the government is not Sadiq al-Mahdi or any leader of any political party. I think that to rule and to evaluate the performance of the government, this is the function of the people of the Sudan. And this function can be only performed if free election is convened. And I think that now this government is preparing for free election, transparent election, and monitored election. And after that, we will see whether Sadiq al-Mahdi is actually ruling a correct rule, or this will consider only or will represent only his own opinion.
The government doesn't seem to have money to address this economic crisis that Sudanese face. So how will the government review and resolve this, since the government cannot even pay its diplomatic missions or offices abroad?
You know that actually our country is a very rich country. I think that the production of gold is more than 200 tons, and we produce a lot of quantity of sesame, a lot of, and also we have livestock, which is, subject to be exported to African and Arab countries.
That was Dr. Rabi Abdelati Obeid, an advisor to the Sudanese communications minister. He was speaking to VOA's Peter Clotty. And from Sudan, we go to Zimbabwe, where striking Zimbabwean doctors who were ordered by the labor court on Saturday to end a 23-day strike are vowing to continue with the industrial action. They're saying that their demands have not been met by President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government. Their demands include salary payments in United States dollars instead of the local bond notes, or real-time gross settlements, RTGs, improved working conditions, revival of a multi-million dollar state-sanctioned vehicle loan scheme, and several other issues. The doctor representative, Dr. Mtabisi Bebe, Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, says that they won't heed Judge Betty Chiziba's ruling, noting that the judge also gave the government's employment agency, the Health Service Board, permission to dismiss striking doctors and start paying them with immediate effect. Dr. Bebe tells VOA Zimbabwe Services' Gibbs Dube that the doctors, numbering over 400, are not worried about the next action to be taken by the Health Services Board. He says that all negotiations with government officials, including Vice President Constantino Chiwenga, have been unsuccessful.
Following the ruling by the labor court, we have obviously consulted our members regarding the ruling. Obviously, we are doctors and we are law-abiding citizens. And our position right now, most of our grievances that we presented to the minister have not been adequately addressed. Yes, and that alone has made some of our members and the majority, in fact, to decide not to return to work, because there is nothing at work that can be used to help patients in delivering quality healthcare services.
So in this case, are you really saying definitively that you're not returning to work?
Yes, most of our members have shown their intent not to return to work until such a time that they receive satisfactory solutions in regard to their grievances that they raised 3 weeks ago.
Are some of your members willing to go back? What is going on?
We haven't really done the statistics, but the majority have shown their intent not to return to work.
And then it seems as if the Labour Court actually gave the Health Service Board to actually fire you or take any disciplinary action against you, and not even to pay you for the days you've been away from work. What's your take on that?
Exactly. Our position has always been clear that going to work or not going to work, as long as our grievances are not addressed, our situation and our stance remains the same. There is no going back. We are waiting for solutions. We are waiting for those with authority to intervene and provide the necessary equipment and medicines that are required to assist patients in institutions. And for your own information, most of our members, doctors, did not receive that December salary. So it's actually confusing. How do you expect the same people to report for work without their salary?
So are you not scared that you are going to be fired?
People everyone has been expecting that at some point in time, they're going to be fired. And it's quite sad because, as I'm speaking right now, the doctor-to-ratio patient in Zimbabwe is very bad. And firing doctors won't solve the situation either. It will worsen the healthcare system in the country, which is already in a critical level. So it's not going to help anything. It's going to actually worsen the situation.
We heard recently that retired General Constantino Chiwenga, who is the Vice President of Zimbabwe, is actually engaging doctors. So what is the situation concerning that?
Yes, we have remained hopeful. We had our last meeting with the Minister of Health about a few days ago. We actually submitted our grievances to the Minister with the hope that the Minister is going to convey our message to the Honorable Vice President. So we're still waiting for the response.
And in essence, are they addressing the issue concerning you being paid in US dollars, nothing of that sort, or you've got something?
The issue of being paid in US dollars is what we're still trying to negotiate with our employer. Because the situation in the market is that everything is now being charged in US dollars. If you come to Zimbabwe, notice that everything is being charged in US dollars. It's for myself to pay the annual practicing certificates from our regulators, I have to pay in US dollars. So I can't even pay my annual subscription for me to continue practicing because I don't have the US dollar, you know. Our salaries are in RTGS, and once we have the RTGS, is not even enough to buy anything in the market, let alone pay school fees for my children.
Dr. Mtabisi Bebe is the Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association. He spoke with VOA Zimbabwe Services reporter Gibbs Dube from Harare. We were unable to get a comment from senior government representatives about the labor court ruling and the doctor's strike. In the DRC, Congolese were looking forward to going to the polls yesterday in a historical election that would mark the first peaceful transition of power in the country in over 60 years. However, the elections were postponed by 1 week to December 30th by the country's Electoral Commission. Thus, this announcement by the commission chair, Corneille Nangaa, marks the third time the elections were postponed, a move opposed by many in the civil society. Kambale Msavuli is a spokesman of the civil society advocacy group Friends of Congo. He tells me that he sees no willingness on the part of President Kabila to hold a free, fair and credible election.
December 23rd, the Congolese people were expecting to have an election. An election that's been 2 years delayed. What has unfolded is that the Kabila regime has shown no intent of organizing an election. In 2016, they delayed it for a year. In 2017, they again delayed for 2018. And today, December 23rd, 2018, we were supposed to have elections. Mm. And they've just delayed it again for another 7 days.
Okay, so this makes it the third or the fourth time when they have been postponing the election. What are some of the reasons given by the Electoral Commission Chairman in the recent postponement of the elections? And do you in the civil society actually believe some of the reasoning behind it?
So Nangaa has said that the reason of the delay is, one, there was a fire in one of the depots, wherever they were keeping the electoral machines. And then, two, logistically, it will be hard for them with less than, you know, a week to go for the elections to deploy all the machines in all the polling stations across the Congo. We have about 70,000 polling stations across the country. I mean, the civil society, the Congolese people as a whole, are clear that these reasons don't make sense. Because if for about 3 years, the Electoral Commission has been unable to organize election, having an additional week does not show really that there is an intent to organize the elections.
So do you feel like there's no goodwill on the side of Kabila's administration in holding this election?
Indeed, and we have seen it by concrete actions. One, they have added more judges in the Constitutional Court, which we believe is going to be used to certify a rigged election. Two, they're introducing an electronic electoral machine, which is touchscreen. Most Congolese inside of the country have not even used touchscreen devices. The company actually making these machines, the company is based out of South Korea. The South Korean government itself has actually put out the official statement saying that they are not responsible for anything this company would be doing because of the track record of this company in engaging in rigged elections around the world. That's, you know, paraphrasing the statement from the South Korean government. There are many other issues. You know, 6 million voters that we do not know in the electoral roll, and so on. So seeing all these challenges with just the credibility of organizing a free and fair elections, seeing the delay simply means to us that they have no intent to actually have an electoral process that the people would find credible.
But if, as you mentioned, there's a possibility that they've already rigged the election before the election happens, then why would they even bother to postpone it?
The expectation from the Kabila government was that the Congolese people will not engage in this process and there will not be light shone on the issue. Surprisingly, Congolese across the country have taken on to the process. The reason why they're taking on to the process is they're seeing this as an opportunity to engage in something very noble, which is the Article 64 of the Congolese Constitution, where it calls on Congolese to take matters into their own hand if there is an individual, a group of individuals who are trying to take control of the country illegally. So what they've done is they've showed up. They've went to rallies and campaign rallies. They've organized protests. They've used all legal means to transform their country, and they're taking the world as a witness to their actions. If things escalate, the Congolese people can say, we have tried everything.
Kambale Musavuli is a spokesman of the civil society advocacy group Friends of Congo. I reached him in Washington, D.C. New records by the International Organization for Migration find more than 6,600 Africans have died over the past 5 years, most while crossing the Sahara Desert towards Europe. However, the study notes that these numbers are just the tip of the iceberg. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
This year alone, hundreds of eyewitness accounts have confirmed nearly 1,400 migrant deaths on the African continent. But researchers say these numbers represent only a tiny fraction of the overall number of deaths of people on the move in Africa. The International Organization for Migration reports most of the recorded deaths have occurred in the Sahara Desert, northern Niger, southern Libya, and northern Sudan. It says the migrants use these routes to reach Libya, the gateway to Europe and a hoped-for better life. IOM spokesman Joel Millman says the migratory routes are used by smugglers and traffickers who take advantage of the African migrants they encounter. He says the main causes of recorded migrant deaths in Africa indicate that many are preventable.
Starvation, dehydration, physical abuse, sickness, and lack of access to medicines are causes of death frequently cited by the migrants who reported deaths on routes within Africa. Involvement with human smugglers and traffickers in human beings can put people in extremely risky situations in which they have little agency to protect themselves, let alone fellow travelers they see being abused.
While most of the deaths identified are young men, Millman tells VOA, hundreds of women and children also are among the victims. He says the survey, which deals with the deaths of migrants, reveals that little support is given to those who have survived the terrible journey. He says people who have seen their fellow travelers die are severely distressed. He says they experience significant psychosocial stress but receive little help in recovering from the traumatic events. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria, Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, Jackson. We begin the sports with the CAF Champions League news, where the defending champions Esperance of Tunisia, record 8-time winners Al Ahly of Egypt, TP Mazembe of DR Congo, Mamelodi Sundowns and Orlando Pirates from South Africa, CS Constantine of Algeria, Ismaili of Egypt and Wydad Casablanca of Morocco, as well as Lobi Stars of Nigeria, have all sailed through to the group stage. Ismaili reached the CAF Champions League group stages despite losing 2-1 away at Cotton Sport to mark a memorable return to the elite club competition for the first time since 2010. Having won 2-0 at home in the first leg, Ismaili's defeat in Garoua could not condemn them to the Confederations Cup playoffs, where Cotton Sport were relegated to. Elsewhere, 5-time champions TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo equalized through veteran Tresor Mputu to draw 1-1 at Zesco United of Zambia and progress 2-1 on aggregate as Zesco were relegated to the CAF Confederations Cup playoff. Next door in Zimbabwe, FC Platinum, Zimbabwean champions, stormed into the group phase for the first time ever on the away goal rule despite being held to a goalless draw by visiting AS Otago from Congo Brazzaville. In Uganda, host Vipers SC lost 2-0 at home to Algerian side CS Constantine. That victory ensured that the Algerians progressed to the group stage on the 3-0 aggregate scoreline. Away from the CAF Champions League and Confederations Cup, the Confederation of African Football has confirmed that Cameroon will host the 2021 African Cup of Nations. Ivory Coast were expected to host the 2021 AFCON, but CAF have since decided to allow Cameroon another chance to host the continental showpiece. In women's football, the Super Falcons of Nigeria will take part in an invitational tournament in China in January 2019. The Super Falcons will join host China, Korea DPR and Romania and the other teams as they prepare for the 2019 FIFA World Cup schedule for France later in June. The China Invitational Tournament competition will run from January 14th to the 21st, 2019. Some of the players are excited at the plan of beginning their World Cup preparations early.
Going to the World Cup, we are not just going there to participate. We are going there to make Nigeria proud. We are going there to make our name higher by passing through the group stage. And by the grace of God, we might come back with the cup. Who can say?
I would say Super Falcons that will not go to the World Cup to make up the numbers, but a team who is going there to fight and make history, obviously. And we try to give our best and make sure we don't let our supporters down.
So as a Nigeria, we've been going there. Maybe the preparation is not what to our own expectation, but we're just hoping that this time around is going to be different.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, December the 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Cloti and Rikish Ryuk, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a Merry Christmas, Africa.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Join us on Health Chat Tuesday as we discuss alcohol consumption and how to be safe this holiday season. Our guest is Dr. George Cope, director of the U.S. National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA News is always at the tip of your finger.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.